Very good. Welcome to the Fred Report technical market call for April 10th. I do have an announcement to make, and some discussion of this is appropriate if anyone has any questions. People at Morgan Stanley, Merrill Lynch, and possibly Wells Fargo have probably noticed that we've had some email issues at the worst possible time, of course. These are mostly resolved, but there are going to be some changes in delivery while we work through that process. For now, there will be no links in our email delivery. Apparently, that's what's been causing this trouble. If you don't get or receive a report, please go to the fredreport.com website. Realize we can't put a link into that either. You're going to have to type that manually into your browser. And all the reports are up there. You can simply click on a link to each one you want, and you don't even need your username and password. We're going to leave that like that for a while, and that should fix everybody's problems. Also, you know, we send out some email announcements with every report. I know I don't always read those announcements, but for now, please read those announcements, especially if Jack puts it in red, because they may have some news on what's happening with our email. So far, I've heard from people that we've got the situation resolved and people are receiving the emails again. But obviously, this was a problem and very concerning, and we're working through it. And obviously, anyone who has any questions about that are free to email Jack at research@thefredreport.com or me at fred@thefredreport.com, and I'll get that request to Jack. We're getting all your emails. You weren't getting ours. That's the problem, and it looks like the problem was the links, as I said. We're still working through it, but you should be receiving everything. Now, with that, let's get to the stock market here first. Stocks, obviously, you know, a couple of things we can note. The first one is it does look like our 500 to 485 range is going to hold, and it also looks like we had some of the overshoot we thought we were going to have. We got to 481. All things considered, I'll take that as a win, given the fact that the rally that we were looking for in March has not materialized yet. And there's a couple of things about the trading action that we do want to mention. The first is when you have big up days like we had yesterday, there's almost always retracement. Almost always retracement. So, again, we're saying we're not going to rush and chase stuff. We're going to let stuff come to us on retracements. Likely, when you have the kind of momentum that we had on the downside, you will often get a divergence bottom. That means a lower closing low in price, closing low, with a higher low in momentum. And I'm going to give an example of one time that occurred. And that's, it's an old example, but we've seen this numerous times. We saw it in 2008, 2009. 1987 was the most interesting because the stock market in 87 actually did not start to rally until after December when we made the closing low after the crash of 87. And that one we did not take out the intraday low. We simply made a new closing low. So we would expect a period of weeks of choppy up and down with a new closing low to fix this problem. And so, again, let stuff come to you, but we do think that that 480 area is likely to hold plus or minus 3%. And if anybody has any questions about that and would like to talk to me, do feel free to email me at fred@thefredreport.com. I am going to Texas next week for two Celebration of Life services, but I will be checking emails. And I will do my best to respond when I'm at those meetings. And I'll be around through Monday noon anyway. So we'll have plenty of time, and I will be working over the weekend. Let's talk about the bond market just for a minute. I have to tell you, TLT and the bonds are acting a little bit screwy. I'm going to tell you one of the reasons why I say that. Obviously, we all know that TLT is the 20-year bond price, and it's down today, even though the 30-year yield and the 10-year yield are down. Those rates are falling this morning, and bond prices are falling on the TLT. So, you know, one of the things we're looking at here is TLT making a bit of a bottom in here. We still think that we can get to 95, but one of the things we may be wrong about here that we should watch, we've been concerned about higher interest rates in the second part of the year. That concern is still operative, but it's possible that it comes early. This is sort of a screwy trading today, to be honest with you. Not sure what to make of it, but just be aware that's going on. The other thing we mentioned, commodities had an inside day 2 days ago. We have moved through the top end of that inside day and the day before, and that means the downside for gold is probably over for a bit. Gold is fine. You can stay with gold and mining stocks. We still have concerns because of accumulation, but the direct signal, which would have been taking out the lows of the inside, the day before the inside day, right now is off the table. So I wouldn't worry so much about gold holdings here. Obviously, we have seasonal weakness coming in commodities. Some of them, anyway, oil and gas are at risk and are going down. So all of that is relatively normal. And, you know, I'm going to stop making prepared comments because I'd rather have questions from people. I'm going to put Jeff Garbaz on the phone here for a minute. I do want to mention short interest is still up. I want Jeff to talk about that and then anything else he wants to talk about. So, Jeff, if you're available, let's have it.
Hey, Fred. How are you?
Functional, given this email business.
There you go. Okay, so let's start with short interest. We just got latest short interest in, and this is always on a two-week delay. It's actually not quite a two-week delay because it went through the end of the month, from the middle of March to the end of March. And obviously the market was going down during that period. New York went up again, up 84 basis points, up by 142 million shares, and NASDAQ went up by 90 million, up 58 basis points. Both of those are like recent highs. NASDAQ is an all-time high. New York goes back to like in the mid-2010s type of high, so it's almost like a 10-year high, which is a really big number. One thing to mention, which I think will be useful for everyone, is if we looked at yesterday, obviously we had a 10% move. The question is, how much of that was really due to, quote unquote, a short squeeze? And so the answer is, because we have all the data, we track this and can kind of get a good handle about how stuff played itself out. So coming into yesterday, both short squeezes and where shorts are correct, and these are both two categories of heavily shorted stocks, were down for the week. Short squeezes were down 3.97, and shorts correct were down 3.88. And what happened after 1:15 yesterday in the close, short squeezes went from being down 3.97 to up 0.58. So that was a reversal of 4.55%. Now, remember, the S&P was up 9.52% and the Russell was up 8.66%. Here's where the really big changes took place. It was on the weaker stocks. And Fred, after I comment on that, I'd love to get your thoughts on that, on why the weaker. So the weaker stocks that are heavily shorted, they went for the week from being down 3.88 to finishing the day up 7.70%. That was a change of 11.58%. Clearly, you know, moving above what S&P did at 9.52. Type fours, interestingly enough, which are weak technically and no one is short, they went up even more than the heavily shorted names, which to me actually makes a lot of sense because a lot of those companies are good companies. Shorts stay away from them. So when we do hit lows, the fours tend to always outperform, and that's a big problem for guys that run long short funds as well. So anyway, so yesterday, the fours were down 3.38. They finished the day for the week up 9.25, which is a return of 12.63, beating the heavily shorted names of 11.58. So that's kind of what's going on in our world. I'm going to be really interested to see how today plays itself out. It's kind of funny. Before this call came on, I had CNBC on, and they were commenting about like the fact that we're down like between 2 and 3%, depending on what index you're looking at. And like, oh, that isn't a big deal anymore because we're kind of conditioned to this now. And it's true. It's kind of like after yesterday, like people are just kind of like a down 2% move doesn't seem like a big deal after we just had an up 10%. So, Fred, I'd love your thoughts on the weakest doing the best yesterday and people just getting conditioned to these bigger moves and not thinking they're as big of a deal when both you and I know they are a big deal.
Yeah. Well, let me comment on the weaker stocks first. Obviously, my immediate take on that, and I'm not nearly as good at this as you are, is that is a sign that some of the shorts are covering here, and we should probably see more of that in the coming days. Being up or down 2%, let me use kind of a weird analogy, but I used it with somebody yesterday, and they liked the analogy. So, when you have a market like this, let's think of it as I'm in my bedroom on the second floor of my house, and I throw a basketball out the window. That ball is going to bounce around dramatically for a while because of the height I dropped it from, but ultimately stop bouncing and roll along on the ground. And that's the way the market works after these high percentage moves. Beget other high percentage moves, but those fall off. For example, I don't think we're going to be down 10% today, but we could be down 2 or 3%. I don't think that's bad. And that's why we're saying stocks should come to you. Oddly enough, my volatility indicator, which is fairly good at predicting bottoms, is not anywhere near the highs that it was even a week ago. So that says the market is in a bottoming process here, and I think it is, but that it could be up and down a good bit. I will also say that in big, bull markets such as we have had, my invisible support areas, which in this case were 500 to 485 with some overshoot possible, those areas have basically held declines. Even in the decline in 2022, we went below the equivalent of those numbers, but we're only below them for a month. And when we pop back above them, that was one of your signals to buy. So from a tactical standpoint, what I would be doing is adding money. And in fact, I'd even be calling clients and asking them to send in some more money to add, but bleeding it in slowly. I don't think there's any big rush. And let's give an example that's funny. Let's say we're in a stock like Palantir. And Palantir, which is down 3.5%, and we decide on Palantir, we're not going to buy it at 88.75. We're going to wait to add to our positions at 84. Well, if the stock goes to 100 and we're already in, that's okay. Right? I mean, I've had bigger problems than that. We've had them this week. So, again, don't rush on stuff. The other thing I would say, Jeff, what's interesting to me about today is you're still seeing value stocks like Coca-Cola and Colgate do fairly well. And they've done fairly well in this decline. Some of this decline has masked, in my opinion, continued rotation out of tech. So what I would be looking for in the tech sector is buy the very best companies. You know, we've talked about NVIDIA, Palantir, Apple on the call. I think those are some of the very best companies. An old mentor of mine told me that when everything goes on sale, you want to buy the very best stuff. And the second thing is, if we do a retest in 3 to 5 weeks, we need to watch that very carefully, because we're going to want to be buying the stocks then that are showing relative strength and not the weakest names. An example of that, with all this hoorah and falderall, Tesla has actually made higher lows on this decline than it did on the first decline in March by a little bit. So that, for example, would be a high relative strength name. You know, that's the sort of thing we should be looking for.
Hey, Fred, just to comment on that,
yeah.
There are a couple other stocks that kind of last week made new lows and didn't make new lows on, let me think about this, on Tuesday's close. You know, a lot of stuff closed at absolute new lows on Tuesday before we got yesterday's bounce, right?
Yeah.
But the couple stocks that didn't were, and I'll see what you think about these, NVIDIA made its low last Thursday, Netflix made its low last Thursday, and so did Meta. And
yeah,
these are out of the what I call the magnet stocks, because I include the ends from Netflix and NVIDIA as well as Tesla in that category. So what do you think about how their lows played out last week versus a lot of others in that category that played out on Tuesday's close? So Meta,
yeah,
Netflix,
yeah,
and NVIDIA.
I would classify those names as premier companies, the very best in their areas, okay? And those would be names that I'd have orders in to buy. Wouldn't necessarily chase them, but I'd have orders in to buy them. And when I look at something like AMD, and I know I keep picking on AMD, or Intel, INTC, those aren't premier companies and they're not trading like it. I'd be much less interested in trying to buy them. You know, when in doubt, upgrade your portfolios. I've had some advisors that have had stocks that they haven't really wanted to have. They've taken losses on those, tax losses on those, a little early, but tax losses on those sorts of stocks. You upgrade at that point. You go for the very best names you can find at that point.
Yeah, I only have one more comment, because I'm sure we have lots of questions.
Sure.
But I think your comment about volatility is right on. So we have an indicator in Phil's stuff called the EBB, the Erlanger Big Barf Indicator. And what's interesting about it is, if we looked at last Friday's close, the daily was at minus 36. And after yesterday's close, it closed at minus 17. The weekly was at minus 46, and now it's at minus 26. And the monthly was at minus 31, and now it's at minus 10. So they're all still negative, but they're well off of their lows. And this is a volatility measure, Fred. It's kind of like,
yeah,
looking at the S&P against the VIX on those three different time frames. But even the VIX itself has done that as well. So to your point, we might have hit our peak in volatility. And you know what's interesting is there's a really – I'll have to forward this on to you, and then maybe we talk about it in the weekly. But there's a piece that looked at, like, the biggest weekly moves in volatility, right? Off of the VIX historically, right?
Yes.
Last week, the VIX for the week, it started at the start of the week is at 21.65, and it finished at 45.31, and that was a spike of 109%. It's the third largest on record. The largest was during the pandemic, February 28th of 2020. It started at 17, went to 40. That was a spike of 135. And then in 2015, we had a spike in August of 118%. So it really shows you how extreme we've been in terms of the rate of increase in volatility. Thoughts on that also?
Yeah. Again, volatility, I do a different thing, but volatility's been up. It should start to fall off. After a while, people just get tired. One other thing I should mention before we open the calls, we've had better numbers on the put-call ratio, but yesterday's number wasn't as extremely negative as I would want to see. Day before yesterday was a 123, which is what we want to see, but yesterday was only a 97. I think there's still a feeling that this is going to be over a little bit sooner than it could be. And again, from our standpoint, we want to be focusing on getting, upgrading to higher quality names. And, I would assume that the maximum this is going to go on here before a meaningful rally is, say, 3, 4 weeks, but it could be sooner that we get a meaningful rally. I do think we still have risk of retracement, down the road. We have to watch for that.
So you just said something that I've got a question for you now. So, one of, I think, the smarter things that Phil ever said was, what's a long-term move, right? And his definition of a long-term move is a move of magnitude. So yesterday, in one day, we had roughly like a 10% move, which is obviously a move of magnitude. So do you consider yesterday to be a meaningful move from the standpoint of longer-term moves, even though it happened in just, a couple hours? It was such a big deal. Do we consider that to be meaningful?
Yes, it is meaningful. But again, Walter Murphy did some really nice analysis for me. We were talking yesterday. All of these big moves, of say, I think there were 21 Walter looked at, 18 of them were bear market rallies.
Yep, agreed.
Right.
The biggest moves always happen in bear markets.
So again, from the standpoint of what our people should be doing now, obviously buy the best quality stocks and let them come to you and expect some kind of retracement. And if the worst happens and we don't get it and we just move immediately to all-time highs, that's going to be less difficult to explain to clients than almost anything else. Right.
So last kind of question that just popped into my mind related to this. So what if we finish today at higher highs than we closed yesterday? What would you think about that?
I'd still be looking for some downside.
Okay. But would some follow through be a positive as far
That
as you're
would be a
concerned, though?
huge positive. That would say
Okay.
we're going immediately to 575 on the spider.
Okay, great. Awesome. That's
Got
all for me right now.
it. Okay. Let's get some client questions.
Hey, good morning, Fred.
Good morning.
So on your put call ratio, I saw the 1.23, but you mentioned 0.97. I'm seeing 1.04. I don't know if you're looking at the,
I can look at it again. I look at that number late at night,
Yeah.
okay? And it's possible they redid it, but and it they did do it, redo it to 1.04. So that's a better number, but it's still not complete panic level. Essentially 1 to 1. Normally calls are a little bit more, so that is good. That is better.
Okay, now on this backing and filling versus a retrace or divergence bottom, I mean, obviously we had 87, we had 08 where we retested and made, a lower low, like in October, November of 08, and the final low was March in 09. COVID was the exception, I guess. We kind of
Yeah.
V-bottomed. I mean, obviously the Fed came in and bazooka moneyed the thing, but I mean, what would you put the probability, I guess, of just some backing and filling versus taking out the 481 on an intraday and then closing back above 480? You know what I mean? Like, how are you kind of looking at that?
Well, again, I would say the chance of a lower closing low or an equal closing low at this point is probably 70%. Now, again, that begs the question, which we're going to take a quick look at, where is the closing low? And that closing low would appear to be, and of course, maybe if I got the right symbol up before I looked at it, that would be better. But the closing low would appear to be 496.48, right? So we could be back in the 490s. And frankly, one of the questions we've had, and this is, I think, germane, is we're ready to rebalance. Where would be the ideal number to rebalance? And I would say the ideal number to rebalance would be 500 on the spider or 501, although, again, we've got people doing some rebalancing now.
And where would we say the V bottom scenario is more happening? If we're above 575 or something, or where?
I would say above 557 to 559, say 560.
Okay, so not even quite filling the gap, I guess, of that.
That would fill the gap of the first down day, and
yeah,
closing above that gap.
Okay. And as far as the breadth, are you looking at any breadth numbers yesterday, advantage decliners? Cause
yeah,
I had a few
there were some better numbers yesterday. One of the things about this that was a concern that I mentioned in the monthly, which, of course, nobody got emailed, but it is on the website, the low on the McClellan oscillator, you know, for the monthly was only minus 167. The McClellan oscillator has been as low as minus 400, right?
Oh, yeah, we remember during COVID, definitely.
Yeah, so that tells – certainly one way to look at that is we have a huge amount of more downside.
The other way to look at it also is that most of the downside was happening in tech, and then staples and utilities and whatever were holding up. So the McClellan, when you look at the total index, wasn't looking as bad because the decline was happening. You know, we got a 30% decline almost in the NASDAQ and Russell, you know what I mean? Whereas we had areas like staples and utilities kind of holding somewhat, you know.
Right. People feel worse, I think, than this has been simply because people that had stocks, you know, some of the tech names had 50% pullbacks.
Right.
Right. And those, everyone has those in their portfolios pretty much, right? This really, you know, you get a 20% correction, you know, every couple of years, and this has basically been one, right?
Right.
And one of the other things that I would mention too is much of the time when you get those 20% corrections, it is on some sort of news item that means you can't buy the correction because the news is so bad. Right?
Yeah, I was honestly thinking it was going to be 2026 just because midterm elections are usually the worst. But,
so was,
you know.
What would have made sense, but it still could happen. But what would have made sense is rally from the end of March into May, June, and then we start having problems. That was my forecast, and maybe we'll actually rally from here, and that'll turn out to be somewhat correct. But one of the things that happened, and again, guys, I'm older. I'm not as old as Bob Robbins is when he's on the call, but I'm old enough to remember October 16th, 1987. We all went home thinking that the market had bottomed. And again, in the crash of 87, remember, we had fallen roughly 25% from August to October. And then the crash day that took the market down 50% was only one day. The problem we had in 87, and again, people don't remember, was Baker went on TV and said he didn't like the trade imbalances, so the United States government was going to do something about trade and float the dollar. And that's what caused everybody to flip out and the thing to go. Right now, it is not lost on me that this type of this decline that we've had is also based on trade. So, you know, we'll have to see what happens. But again, even then, the market had a divergence bottom and rallied. And so that's why I'm expecting that now.
Okay. I'll leave you with one statistic here on the NYSE advanced decline. So yesterday's number was a reading of 68.3. Just to put that in perspective, 1982 had a 47 number, you know, just coming off of that big bear market, starting the new bull market. And then March of 2009, which was right around the bottom of the financial crisis, we had a reading of 35.9. Yesterday was higher than, and then we had the fat flash crash in 2010, if you remember. Anyway, yesterday's number was higher than both of those, so maybe it's a good things of you know, future returns, but we'll have to see. But I guess it's a good start, man. I appreciate all your help, though. Thank you.
Got it. And you probably got all my emails. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Other questions? Yes, is that Yogesh?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
So thank you yesterday or day before yesterday for telling me this is hanging in there. So yesterday I realized that how good that advice was. So thank you very much. The second question, that the Chinese market has been realistically punished severely, and most of the large stocks, Alibaba and Baidu and PDD and all of those things have been realistically gone down 30-40%. Any suggestion on that side?
Well, Yogesh, we'll say it this way. One of the things that we have been saying is that there was risk that the January to March trade we did in China was just that, a trade, right? And we've been talking about, obviously, very difficult to do, you know, limiting your risk or stops under that market so that we didn't give all that back. And we actually still haven't. At this point, I would probably hold those stocks for a while. But again, I think the real key with China, because I don't like the demographics of China, some of this trade business with China, honestly, I haven't researched that enough. But I think there's going to have to be some sort of concessions from China. But at the same time, let's just think about this. China's auto company, BYD, has got $15,000 to $17,000 electric cars with as much or more range as a Tesla.
Right.
If we suddenly drop all tariffs and just let those cars come in, I think it would be safe to say that Trump's comments during his campaign that Detroit was on the threshold of a new golden age would be incorrect.
Right.
Right. So I think the answer, and furthermore, remember, and we talked about this at the time, BYD was trying to build a plant in the Maquiladora area of Mexico, which is one way to get around all tariffs.
Right.
Right. So I think whatever trade deal we have with China is going to reduce barriers, but not all barriers. It's, in other words, it's going to be a more complex negotiation than we've seen. And because of that, we could see more China news and turbulence than right now the market seems to be expecting.
No, I mean, the Fred, thank you for one thing, that at that time when you made a decision to get out, I think 90% of the stuff that we got out. I'm just seeing that
I hope other people did. Yeah.
Right. If there is a buying opportunity, then we can look at it. Just like we got suddenly buying opportunity in USA, we were down 20-30% and we were buying it, so it worked out well. The second question, you said that there is a possibility in 4 or 5 weeks that we may still go close to the low that we had. In between this, now next week or so, 10 days, Is there anything that this market can lose all this year, or it may take me some
No,
time?
Yogesh, let me just, and again, let's be clear, because I probably wasn't. This is a closing low, a low closing price versus the last close,
Right.
not a low for the market for the entire period. And we
Right.
could very well see what we saw in 87. In fact, I think we will, where we don't make new intraday lows, but in fact make a new or close to the old closing low, which is 496.48 on the spider. It's not down where we were. It's just below 500. And that's why I've
Right.
been telling people, I have some of my consulting clients that have been rebalancing, and their last rebalance was all set up, and they're just getting ready to hit the button when the friggin' market took off yesterday. So they didn't do anything, which I wouldn't have done either. I think if you rebalance at 500 to 510,
Right.
you're probably going to go a little bit lower.
Right.
But you're going to be happy with that decision later on. Right? And one of the other things, obviously, Yogesh, trying to catch the absolute low of a market that's moving in these percentage terms, it's more important to pick your spots than to try to just get the low, right?
I
When I
agree
think of that,
with
I think of my friend Mark Hills. He had a special diet he used because he liked to drink beer, and his diet was basically to not drink the last beer.
Right.
Okay? So I think the message should be a little more strategic, not worry about getting the exact low, and just say, I want to do this, and if we get here, I'm going to do it even if it feels awful. So,
No,
did I get
the
your
Fred,
question? Did you have any more?
the main thing that why the we are asking you some stupid questions sometimes. We have a client who are already invested. Some
Yeah.
clients are they're still holding a cash, and we are just looking for a better buying opportunity. Yesterday,
Yeah.
what happened was like unbelievable, right? Unexpected, and it
Yeah.
happened, right? So that's what we are looking for. So
Yeah.
thank you
I
very much.
certainly thought the market was going to rally yesterday, but I certainly did not think it was going to rally like it did. I looked at the screen at the end of the day. Actually, Yogesh, what I did was I had a couple of trading positions. I sold them for a profit, and then I went and took a nap. Right? I mean, sometimes you just have to let stuff happen.
Right.
Thank you for your questions, Yogesh. Let's see if there's any other questions. And I've got
Fred,
you on the
hi,
call, so
Nancy.
I
How are
got.
you?
Yes,
Hey,
Nancy?
Fred.
Yes,
Yeah,
Nancy?
I'm going to do a would you rather, if that's okay.
You always do.
I know. ANET
And ANET.
versus PWR.
And I'm looking at daily charts here, and
Okay,
I
that's
would
fine.
say PWR.
Okay. And then compare that to GEV, please.
GEV. Still PWR. The reason is the last low was equal to or a little bit higher than the March low.
If you were going to put a stop, a trader's stop on PWR, where would you put it?
PWR. Nancy, with a stock like this, you have to use a percentage, but I'd make sure that it was above or below 250, 259, ideally even below 243.
Okay, great. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And Nancy, there's a good one thing I'll just mention. You don't have to sell the whole position on one stop. You can use two. That only took me about 8 years to figure out in my career, by the way.
Yeah. Okay, so then I'll give you one more. SNOW
Okay.
versus PLTR.
PLTR immediately.
Okay. And is
Yeah.
there a fish and cut bait level on PLTR?
You know, if you're trading it, you should use a percentage. Frankly, below 75 would be a surprise, a big move below 75. What you could do, Nancy, with this is use my 3-week stop rule and use it on the chart as a 3-day stop rule.
Got it.
Which would be below 75 and then higher for yesterday, and then today would still be higher. But that's a beautiful inverse Prussian helmet formation on Palantir. In other words, a spike low with a higher close. That looks like people's stops got run below 75, and that was the last selling in that. But I wouldn't see the stock, I'm surprised to see the stock go sideways for a while and then go up.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Fred, hey, Bob Robbins here.
Hey, Bob.
Just want to make a quick comment on Palantir. I know that we're not really into fundamentals on this call, but I think it's worth noting that it is said that Palantir, their software, it can instantaneously optimize tariff changes. That's what we want nowadays.
Right, yeah. And, you know, Bob, I'll again, one of the things, I'm going to just tell a quick story and then we'll let people ask questions. Years ago, you had a guy who was, you know, basically went to school and then was working in, a little bit in the computer industry, and he came up with this idea that the big boxes that ran the computers weren't what was important. It was the software, the motor inside them that did that. And basically, that guy started his own company and made several $1 billion on that concept. And when you ask people nowadays who that was, they all say it was Bill Gates. That was actually Ross Perot.
Hmm.
Right? Bill Gates, again, if you're a Mac person, you think, well, Microsoft stole that too. But the real point is, the software is king, and if this really is the premier software company in AI, I think that you have to own it. This could be a Microsoft or an EDS or an Apple.
Yeah. I left out a couple of key words. Their software is said to optimize the supply chain for tariff changes instantaneously.
Right.
And there are people that have researched stocks for 20 years that say this is their favorite stock. Mike Lee on Stuart Varney said the company is going to the moon.
Well, and Bob, it's trading good, too.
Yeah.
I mean, we're almost where we were, you know, given at the short-term peak in March.
Yeah.
Right? After all this, and very few stocks can say that in this environment.
Yeah, let me add that one of the technical rules that we, you and I, Fred, have observed over the years, and that is that the best stocks for the next bull market will show relative strength between the first low and the second market low of a double bottom. And that's just, you know, kind of go with strength as we tend to observe in different contexts. But if Palantir is going to show that kind of relative strength, then it's one of the leaders. So
yeah,
I think Palantir can be a $1 trillion market cap. So that would be a four bagger.
Yeah, from here. And what Bob said is right. I didn't say it well, but that's what I meant when I said you buy the stocks on the second leg down for the divergence bottom that aren't going down as much. It's that high relative strength. Those are 9 out of 10. I mean, nothing works 100% of the time.
Yeah.
But those are invariably your leaders. If you buy 10 stocks like that, I would be willing to bet that 8 of them outperform. Whereas if you buy a normal stock portfolio of 10 stocks, you normally have 3 or 4 that are outperformers, 3 or 4 that are, you know, market performers, and 2 that are duds.
Right.
Yeah. One other thing I'll add, if you use fundamentals at all, if people on the call use fundamentals at all, I think it's worth considering Trump's art of the deal. Is this part of the art of the deal that's happened yesterday or not? And even if it's not, what is the overall part of the deal that might be successful in preventing a new low in the market or a double bottom in the market? It's just worth asking.
Yeah, it's certainly, again, you let stuff come to you and we'll see what happens. Bob, let's move on and see if there's some other questions.
Hey, Fred, it's Barrett.
Time. Hey, Barrett, how are you?
Good, man. Just a couple questions. What do you make of munis right here?
You know, the bond market as a whole is acting screwy, but I think munis look fine, and I think corporates look fine. You know, Barrett, I am in sort of an odd camp here, but I don't think the treasuries are safe.
Right.
I think corporates and munis are safe on a relative basis. In other words, if I were going to do a flight to quality and a flight to safety, it would be the highest rated munis and investment grade or higher corporate bonds.
That makes perfect sense to me.
Now, it doesn't to a lot of people, but, you know, Barrett, I asked a guy yesterday, let's say I came to you, Barrett, big grin on my face, and said, golly, Barrett, you know, things have been a little tough lately. I know you're a rich Wall Street executive, so I want to borrow some money. And, oh, by the way, the minimum payments on my credit card are 1.5 times my mortgage. Would you be a real big loaner of money to someone like that?
Of course not.
Of course not. That's, in a way, what we are when we look at the payments on the debt being higher than the defense budget. But one of the things that I think is also true, Barrett, you know, the world, if I can figure that out sitting here in Chamblee, Georgia, there's probably some real sharp portfolio managers in other countries that are thinking along those lines. But I think that if people see that we're trying to do something about the debt, and that is one of the things Trump is talking about and trying to do, it'll buy enough time to get us a good bit out of this. But we're going to
have to get
out. The
only answer you have there as a creditor, or, you know, if you're asking for more money, is to inflate the problem away.
Yeah, but it's a combination of both.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. Yeah, but it, you know, soon, and Barrett, the other thing, you've probably been lucky enough never to be in really heavy debt. But I can tell you I've seen a couple of friends that are, and what I'll tell you is everything's fine until it's not all of a sudden, until you can't borrow any more money. And then the collapse comes for that person astonishingly fast,
mm-hmm.
Right? Not, it doesn't say you don't have a year then. Right, you've got a couple of months of not making minimum card payments, and you're really kind of stuck.
Right,
right. So that's my concern on bonds. And again, we have a situation. Finally, the 30-year yield, the TYX, is up. The 10-year yield is still way down. And what's interesting is the 10-year yield is down 1.59%. Bond prices, according to TLT, are down 1.56%. That's kind of weird, considering the TLT is a combination of the 10 and 30-year yield to get you to 20.
It tells me that the risk is in the long duration.
Yeah, that's that. I just, you know, if someone were to ask me, so please don't, because I'm going to give you the answer right now. Someone were to ask me, what does that mean? I would have to say, what do you get when you cross an elephant with a rhinoceros, Barrett? Elephino. Right, but I don't know what that means, but I know I sure haven't seen it.
awesome.
Fred, that's the first time I've heard that. That's wonderful.
It's a great joke for kids, by the way, because there's nothing dirty about it at all, right? You can tell that joke to any, 10-year-old kid, and he'll run off and tell all his buddies, and I know a lot of us on the call have kids. So
you're functioning at a high level today, my friend.
Right. Do you have any other questions, Barrett?
Big upside moves like this, you get retraced most. I mean, it's a bear market move, right? I mean,
yeah.
So if we're going to play a double bottom and rebalance, would you sell out of some of your beta stuff as like kind of a freebie right here and then look to buy it back potentially lower, or just swap it right now for, like low volatility?
You know, Barrett, if you trade enough and you're good at it, you could certainly try to do that. Most of our clients probably don't do that. What I would be doing, frankly, is, and especially in an environment like this, I mean, one of the cardinal rules of being a stockbroker in the old days was you need to be calling your clients when things like this are going on because someone else is, right?
Right.
You need to be calling your clients, giving them a projection for what's going to happen, and seeing if you can't get some more money out of them to buy this divergence bottom, because this could be and probably is one of the best buying opportunities we're going to have over the next couple of years.
On this, I have two questions and then one thought that you can comment on. If this bottom does hold at 500, we don't go into a major recession and don't go into a full-blown secular bear market where we drop below that, to 400, 450. Does that give us a chance to where we breathe enough life into this that we can resume the bull market to go challenge much higher highs?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Right.
So kind of get it out of the way now rather than wait until end of the year.
Yeah, and, it's sort of frustrating to me as an analyst that basically I figured out that this was going to happen but was off by 6 months. But every bull market has 20% corrections in it, right? That we haven't ever not had that. You don't have them often 1, 2, 3 years, but this has been 1, 2, 3 years since the last one.
Yeah.
So what the hell, right?
So, can you do one thing for me? Look at Romanoff, Nihilist Romanoff, RNR.
RNR, okay. Yeah, that's a relaxing stock.
Yeah.
You're above the 225 area, which is essentially a double bottom. You cut below it, and you're staying above it. You're back above it. I would say this is something you could buy, and the only thing I would do is I would try to buy it at 232, not here, and I think you'll get 232, and just be patient again, bleed money in slowly, but I wouldn't buy this today unless it hit 232.50.
Okay, and then why does everybody still comment on the VIX when it's just a goofy options volatility indicator of options volatility?
I don't know why. I don't use it myself, but, it is, it's something widely used, and it's not terrible because, again, the VIX to me in many ways is another way of measuring the put-call ratio. The thing that really jacks the VIX up is when the put-call ratio goes up and put premiums go up, right?
Doesn't it have a problem with if we have very low options volatility in general, like the absent in the market like we've had for 3 or 4 months where put call ratios are extremely low and all of a sudden it spikes, but doesn't spike that to all-time highs. It spikes a little bit. The VIX jumps to 45 and everybody's like, oh, there it is, but it's really not a measurement that can be used in other bottoms, right?
I've never liked the indicator because
just the put call?
Yeah. To me, the put call is better because, again, it's, if you're going to look at options activity, I think you should really look at options activity. But a lot of people like the VIX, and there are some good indicators based on it. I just don't use them. I use my own.
Fred, Bob here.
Thanks, man.
The VXX, as distinguished from the VIX, is basically using options to assess the risk of the S&P 500. So to that extent, it's very useful.
Right, and I don't know. There's several different varieties. Bob has pointed out, you know, that there's a couple of different ones, and I don't use them. But, you know, my volatility indicator is also suggesting that we are fairly near, if not at, a bottom. And frankly, I would have to say that my indicator in my own mind is saying we are at a bottom here. Could be retested, but we've had it here. And, you know, some reports, you know, I saw, you know, a couple of reports out there saying, you know, what we ought to do is put in our orders on NVIDIA at $75 to $50, you know, which is what you want to see. I felt very, very bad when my open order at 100 was executed at 98. Right. But let's see if there's some other questions. Other questions.
Hey, Fred, John Meepley.
Scott, yes. First guy.
All right, I'll take
this
it.
This is Chris.
Chris,
that's
let
fine,
him go
ahead.
First, and then we'll do you second, Chris.
Sounds good.
All right, thanks, Fred. Just two stocks for you. Tradeweb, symbol TW.
TW, let me look. As I recall, I looked at that in the chart book last night, and it was not particularly appealing. This is one of those ones, honestly, that if I could get this to 138 from here, I would probably, 136 to 138, I would probably exit. It's
okay.
Not a great-looking chart.
Got it. All right, last one. M as in Mary, W-A.
You know, Mueller Water Products, that was another one in the chart book. It looks okay. It's actually done a little bit better in some respects than the low in 2020, you know, in January. As I recall in the chart book, there were a couple of concerns, but it's in industrials and it's making higher lows. So I think it's probably okay. It's not showing a lot of momentum, but this is one that I would definitely, I guess I would have to buy this.
All right, so I got it. Thanks, Fred.
Sure. Chris.
Hey, Fred, it's Chris.
Yes, sir.
So I've been watching the put call option ratio that you had recommended. Noticed that on Monday and Tuesday, we were over 1.2 each day, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, we were over 1.1 or somewhere in that ballpark Thursday and Friday or something along those lines. So we've had a number of days now where it's been elevated. I think yesterday we said it was above 102 or 104.
It was 1.04 was pointed out. It
okay.
Didn't look that way last night. But, yeah, these are good numbers.
Yeah.
This is finally showing that we're getting some consternation and panic.
So even if we get some negative news, and this is more of a question about the general market, the SPY, let's say, than
yeah.
It is about any specific stock item. So I'm just trying to get some ideas when I'm speaking with clients, when I'm thinking about what can news do to the market. You know, obviously we have 90 days before the final tariffs will come out. He's going to probably make some announcements along the way of deals reached with
yeah.
whoever it might be. I did see the other day that Italy, the wine industry, they wanted to take away tariffs in France. There was, you know, all sorts of different industries related to alcohol and whiskey and what have you. I was really surprised they just caved so easily. And that's coming from Mark Brown, who's a big industry insider in the globe, within the spirits and the alcohol industry.
Yeah.
So at any rate, make a long story short, what kind of news do you think we might see that might move markets and kind of make the put-call ratio irrelevant or make it spike further?
Yeah, you know, I think obviously, I mean, that's a good question with a lot of guessing attached to it. But, you know, my guess is you're going to see some good news on tariffs and probably not a lot of bad news on tariffs. I think, though, that one of the things that Peter Navarro alluded to was that it's not just tariffs. So, you know, the news environment is going to be very tricky. But we all know it's how we react to the news, right, and how the market reacts to the news.
Yeah.
And what the put-call ratio basically tries to say is, bad news is baked in. And the other overriding thing that I do want to mention about sentiment is, you know, we've always said there are two types of sentiment indicators, what people are saying and what people are doing. Put call has to do a little bit more with what people are doing short term. But my investors' intelligence numbers are almost as favorable as they were at the bottom in 2022. Right. The market seems to be expecting, you know, worse on an intermediate basis than we're probably going to get. That's fair.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Sure. Let's hear some other questions.
Hey, Fred, Jeff.
Yes, sir.
I got a point I want to make about the put call and options in general. I have friends who they were trading on the floor 20 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the options market then traded 400,000 contracts a day, okay?
Right.
The other day we traded 120 million contracts in one day. And so that was the equivalent of a year 20 years ago.
Right.
That we traded in one day. So the idea that the options market is not useful in tracking sentiment, nothing could be further from the truth, because you're getting more and more people who are involved in it, which means more and more people have opinions about stocks, and it's incredibly useful. So I don't think you can ever discount the options data
with you. And just to give everybody an example, back in the old days, 20, 30 years ago, you didn't have options that expired in a week. You had options that expired. There was only one set of expirations, and it was monthly, and it was the third Friday. Actually, Friday they stopped trading. Saturday they expired. So I'm an options principal. I don't have any idea what all the new rules are because I haven't used that in a long time. But yeah, I like it as a sentiment indicator. But Jeff, again, and Jack, maybe I'll put the investors' intelligence chart in this week's weekly if it doesn't screw up all of the, you know, links and emails and all that. But the fact that we're at levels on investors' intelligence percent bears, it's a condition indicator. It doesn't say you have to go up right away, but that is highly significant. That's highly significant, right? I mean, the sentiment backdrop is basically intermediate term, very bullish. So let's see if there's other questions. Other questions?
Say, Fred, John off of Minneapolis, what do you think of BABA here, B-A-B-A?
You know, John, I think it is one of the best-looking Chinese stocks. My concern all along has been that the trade from January to February, March in China was just a trade and not an intermediate term bottom or long term investment. But given that, if you think China's going to do well, BABA is one of my very favorite ways to play China on the upside. And it has pulled back neatly. It looks better than Baidu. And one of the things in favor of China here, by the way, still is, if you look at FXI, which is basically old line Chinese blue chips, and compare that to KWEB, which is basically their high flying tech names, FXI actually looks a little bit better, which means the Chinese economy looks a little bit better. And what that's saying now, again, you know, remember that technical analysis and forecasting is a lot like reading an Agatha Christie novel. First you think, geez, the butler did it. Then you think, God, the guy's wife did it. And then you find out at the end the gardener walked by, stabbed him, and left, right? You just don't know. But the fact that FXI is still looking a little bit better than KWEB tells me that actually the Chinese tariff situation is going to resolve favorably, right?
Okay, I got another one here. How about COST?
You know, golly, I haven't looked at that. And that's been a favorite of mine for a long time, and it still is. It's held the support going back to October of 2024. This is a stock, in my opinion, you want to be buying.
Okay.
Even though
thank
it's
you very much.
Up from the lows. Thank you, John. Other questions? Here's someone
hey,
trying
Brad.
To come in. Yes, sir.
Hey, this is John from Williamsburg. I have a just a quick question. If a lot of the stocks that have obviously turned down, they're starting to recycle. So,
yeah.
Are you thinking that a lot of these are just going to be failed recycles and we go back down and retest, or would you see some of these, at least the dailies, getting overbought? And then
I would see the dailies getting overbought. That would be normal. And then, you know, one of the ways to look at a downtrend using the stochastics is, do you make higher highs and higher lows on sell recycles and buy recycles? So what we're going to want to see is the stochastic get overbought or close to it, come back down into the buy zone, and see higher lows on the stock or the market when you're doing that.
Okay, so if these stocks are going to go up and recycle, we should see maybe an up day or two here too. It shouldn't just
be. Oh yeah, I normally. John, these divergence bottoms and big down momentum take anywhere from, you know, 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
Right.
So
I'm not at all dismayed that the market is down today. In fact, I'm happy. I don't want to see that everyone go, oh, good, everything's rosy, here we go. That sets up a good smack.
But if we want to trade around the divergence bottom, we should probably, you know, look to, you know, trim some things on an up day.
Yeah.
If we didn't yesterday.
If that's what you want to do, that's exactly what I would do.
And lastly, are you guys still favorable with the Argentinian stocks like GGAL?
Let me look at that technically. If Bob is still on, he can comment. The chart basically still looks okay. It actually, in some respects, looks better than some of the other financials. Bob, do you have anything on that? Are you still on? He's not. I'll ask him and let you know. But honestly, I hate to say this, GGAL looks substantially better than Bank of America or Citibank, short term anyway.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
Thanks, Fred.
Certainly, John. This has been wild, I know. I hope your wife is not tearing her hair out and trying to kill you when you come home in the evening.
It's getting better.
Good. Okay. Let's see if there's some other questions. Very well. We'll say going once, going twice. Very well. This will end the Fed Report technical market call for April 10th, 2025. Everybody have as relaxing a weekend as you can. And remember, this too shall pass. It may be like a kidney stone, but it will pass. No, I'm kidding. This too will pass. I think we're in pretty good shape, and I like the action today so far. Thank you.